Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Hello and welcome to today's Classic Replay, bringing one of our treasures out of the archive. And today we go back to November 2012, a show which asked questions like, were the concentration camps of the Holocaust absolutely evil or simply something that goes against people's tastes today? Canon Angus Ritchie was the author of From Morality to Metaphysics, in which he argues that God is the best explanation of moral realism, that there are objective moral facts. Well, Carl Jones is an atheist who was studying for a PhD at the time, and he argued that God is an unnecessary entity when it comes to explaining why there might be a realm of objective morality. Hope you enjoy today's discussion. Just a reminder as well that you can find out more from Premier Unbelievable at our website, premierunbelievable.com. Loads more resources, videos, podcasts, articles there, and you can register for our newsletter as well. We'll send you a free ebook if you do that. Again, premierunbelievable.com. But for now, let's get stuck into this classic show from the archives in which we address the question, can atheism account for morality? Well, joining me today is Canon Angus Ritchie. He's the director of the Contextual Theology Centre, and Kyle Jones is also on the line. He's a PhD student out in the States. And, well, Canon Angus is, of course, our Christian. Kyle is our atheist today. And we're talking about the question, can we be good without God? Does atheism fail to account for morality? Well, it's a subject that we've done a few times before, sometimes called the moral argument for God, and we're going to be looking at that. And so, if you're into philosophy, this will be one for you, but even if you're not, I'm going to ask both our guests to, where possible, keep the terms as layperson-friendly as possible. So let's introduce our guest today, and the person making the claim that our perception of morality does bespeak something beyond just ourselves is Angus. Angus, thank you very much for joining me today.
Very good to be here.
It's great to have you. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a canon. What does that mean exactly?
It means that I'm involved in Worcester Cathedral. I'm part of the College of Canons, which advises the cathedral on its kind of life and development.
Nothing to do with big guns firing.
Nothing to do with big guns or being fired.
No, that's a shame. But but in any case, you are the director of the Contextual Theology Centre in London.
Yeah.
It sounds very grand. Boil it down for us. What does that mean?
Well, it actually grows out of the work of local Christian churches engaging in public life. So, in fact, it's a long way from philosophy. It's community engagement with people of other faiths and of none on issues of common concern. So obviously that's one kind of aspect of religion as a public truth.
Mm. I mean, I've seen some of your tweets and your Twitter feed, and a lot of them seem to be in the area of social justice and those kinds of issues. Those are the kind of issues you're dealing with on a kind of day-to-day basis.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But you've come in to talk about what is really a very philosophical subject.
Yes.
So where did your interest stem from in this area of whether our morality points to God?
I mean, philosophy has always been another interest of mine. I think the thing that connects them up is this sense of religion as a public truth. So part of what I'm involved in is what that looks like on the ground and how people who believe religion is a public truth can engage constructively in the wider society. But part of that's about giving reasons for what you believe.
Mm.
So saying, well, these convictions are not merely things that you know, are a good social glue and a form of kind of social capital, but we actually have reasons to think they might be true.
Let's talk about the event that's coming up. And if you're listening to this ahead of this event, I do encourage you to get along to it. You're actually going to be in conversation with Julian Baggini, who's quite well known as an atheist philosopher, and Mark Vernon, who's more of an agnostic. Both have been on the programme before themselves. But you're going to be talking about this subject that we're looking at today. So what's the event about?
So as well as having a book coming out on this issue, I've also written a report for Theos, which tries to put this in less technical language and also draw some of these connections between the questions about truth claims and the implications for the role of faith in public life. So Theos and the London School of Economics are hosting this debate where the three of us are going to talk through the issues raised in the report.
I mean, Theos have been doing work. They're a sort of Christian think tank looking at the role of Christianity in public life and observing that there are some voices, some secular voices, that would like to see its role diminished or feel that it has an unfair place at the table. And I suppose you're kind of providing some of the philosophical backing to the idea that religious truth claims have some merit as a kind of having some real philosophical grounds for believing that, that religion might have something to say about what is true and what is not.
That's right. I think in making a case for a role for faith in the public square, you've both got to talk about, well, how are you going to negotiate a common life across disagreement? So there's a very practical question, is faith inherently divisive? But then you also need to have a conversation about, well, is it rational? And if we're going to make assertions into public life on the basis of thinking something's true, can we give any account that people who don't start off with the same presuppositions can engage with of why we might be making those assertions?
Well, you're going to be talking with Julian and Mark at that event on whether morality needs a religious foundation.
Yeah.
And that's happening on Thursday, the 6th of December at 6:30 in the evening at the London School of Economics. So if you want to get along to that, I would say, great, go for it. I don't think there's any entry charge or anything like that.
No need to pre-book.
But if you want to find out more, then do check out the website of the Contextual Theology Centre, that's theology-centre.org. And, of course, links, as ever, from the Unbelievable podcast as well. So the webpage is premier.org.uk/unbelievable. Well, we'll have Angus lay out his argument in as clear terms as possible for those of us who don't have all the philosophical background that he does. But the person who will be interacting with him on this is Kyle Jones, new to the programme as well. So welcome along, Kyle. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on. Kyle, tell us a little of your background. You're an atheist, obviously, but have you always been an atheist? Did you ever have any sort of relationship with religion at any point in the past?
Yes, I did. I was a Christian for about 5 or 6 years there during my late teens and early 20s. And then I slowly, through studying theology, through studying philosophy, and, you know, critical analysis of the biblical canon, etc., started to, quote-unquote, lose my faith or find myself, if I want to put it in a positive sense. But so that has occurred over the last 6 or 7 years. So I was Christian for a little bit, and then I left it.
But you've really interested yourself in continuing the dialogue and the debate, as it were, because you're now studying for a PhD, I understand, in religion, ethics, and society.
Yes, I mean, my master's degrees at Boston University were all in theology and philosophy and religion. When I kind of deconverted, I like to joke with myself is that it was already too late. I already had pigeonholed myself as as being into theology. So now, what do I do as an atheist studying this stuff? And so I just kept going.
Okay, tell us a little bit about. I mean, you obviously are in a different kind of social context in the States to here in the UK, but. I mean, I do sense when I very often talk to atheists in the States that they feel that they sort of have a kind of duty to respond to what they believe is a sort of religious authoritarianism out there and that kind of thing. Perhaps something we wouldn't be so familiar with in this country, but do you feel that you kind of have that sort of a calling to address those who do have religious beliefs in the States?
Yes. In an ironic way, it could be like a voice in the wilderness, but I think 73% of Americans identify as Christian. So it's a high amount of people who identify as Christian in the United States. So I think it's a little less in the UK. That's like 69 or 70, but still high.
I think the key difference is probably in church going, where I think it's much higher probably than in the UK, isn't it?
Oh yeah, they're much more zealous here.
I find the atheists are often more zealous as well. By the same token, I don't know whether that's because they feel that there's more of a battle to be fought, perhaps.
Yeah, it might be that. It might be that way. It might be also due to the large role that evangelism has in American society. I mean, you're constantly evangelized.
Mm. And would you call yourself an evangelist of the? In the opposite direction now, Kyle?
No, I hope not to be, because I think I tried to learn my lesson the first time around. So, but of course, we're all evangelists in our own ways. So
we are indeed. Well, we're going to talk about this subject today. Good without God. That's the sort of catchphrase that I've noticed quite often used by American atheists in particular. I think some of the secular organizations over there have used it on billboards and things like that. And it raises all kinds of questions about whether we need religion to be moral. And the more fundamental question about whether atheism actually accounts for our sense of morality. That's what we'll be looking at on today's program. And so we're going to be hearing from Angus here in the studio and Kyle responding on this question of whether our moral sense does point towards a God, a theistic view of the world, if you like. We'll try and not make this sound too technical, and I'll be here to try and rein back Angus or Kyle if they start going off on their PhD thesis too much. But that's the subject of today's show.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
So I look forward to hearing your thoughts on the programme today, and do get in touch and let us know what you think about what our guests have to say today. Angus Ritchie joins me, director of the Contextual Theology Centre and the author of a new book, From Morality to Metaphysics, The Theistic Implications of Our Ethical Commitments. And he's going to be explaining today why he believes our sense of morality does in fact suggest that there is a God. And why, for him, atheism doesn't account for our moral commitments. So responding, as I mentioned earlier, to Angus today, Kyle Jones, out in the States, he's a PhD student there. And I think probably the first thing we should do, Angus, is to allow you to kind of, in brief, set out your case. Maybe the first thing to ask, though, before you kind of explain where you're coming from, is perhaps what you're not saying in this
Absolutely.
Argument. So maybe misconceptions. What are some of the misconceptions people come to when they hear you talking about God and morality and religion?
I think there are a number. The first one is that the argument I'm putting forward begins with the claim that morality is objective, that there is a moral truth, that's something which really the only thing that makes sense of what we're doing when we're thinking about how to live well. And obviously that can be misconstrued by saying, well, hold on, does that mean you're saying what we believe now is right? And so, no, I believe there is an objective moral reality, an objective moral order. And in fact, it's precisely that belief that means our current beliefs, the conceptions of our culture, can be challenged and critiqued. Mm. We're trying to get something right. Mm. And we may not always do that. Mm. Another thing I think is people sometimes think I'm saying that atheists have no reason to do the right thing. And again, absolutely not saying that. You don't need some kind of incentive of eternal reward to do the right thing. I mean, doing the right thing is precisely something you don't need those kind of incentives for. Otherwise, your motive's very different. So the claim isn't that atheists have no reason to be good, and the claim isn't that even that atheists have no ways of working out what might be the right thing.
So those are some of the misconceptions.
Yeah.
And I do often, I said we'd title this program Good Without God. That's kind of been the billboard or bumper sticker slogan for some atheist organizations who seem to be suggesting that that religious organizations are saying you have to be religious to be good. That's not what you're saying, though, is it?
Absolutely not.
And when we say, can we be good without God, we're perhaps asking a more fundamental question than simply, can we live good lives, but whether the concept of goodness makes sense without God, which is a sort of different thing to saying you can't live well unless you believe in God, sort of thing.
Yeah, I think there's a... I mean, if you believe morality is objective, you've got to believe that there... Well, I mean, I suppose you could believe morality was objective and we had no capacity for getting to it. But what I'm arguing is that on the basis of the way we reflect and try to live well and think through what we're doing, we're trying to get something right.
Mm.
And in thinking it through, we've got to think we've got some capacity when we're sensitive to sensibilities and to reasons for getting it right.
Let's just try and nail down what we mean by moral realism, which is a term you use in the book and in the report for Theos quite a bit. And I found it fascinating. You tell a little story at the outset of philosopher Philippa Foot, who's a secular philosopher, but kind of, for you, nailed the issue on the head when she returned, well, she learnt during the Second World War about the concentration camps. Just talk us through that.
So she said at the end of the war, the news was coming out that there had been these camps, and she thought it's just, it's not possible to articulate, it's not getting right what we mean to say this is evil, this is wrong, to say, well, that's something that's constituted by our feelings. Our feelings of revulsion, our feelings about a reality, and it gets it the wrong way round to try and say morality just is expressive. So she thought that this, in a sense, one of the ultimate moral evils, the only way of accurately describing what was going on was to say that this transgressed a fundamental reality.
That this was really wrong.
Yeah.
It wasn't just that it felt wrong to us.
Absolutely.
Because there were other philosophers of the time saying that actually morality is just boils down to our feelings and our, you know, J.L. Mackey, I think, one of the key ones who critiqued moral realism. And so, but there's been an interesting swing back to a belief in actual moral facts of late, because one can hardly pick up one of the new atheist books like The God Delusion or others without them basically saying this and the other thing is absolutely wrong and terrible. You know, religion has done X, Y, and Z. But the thing I often wonder when I read those things is, well, on what basis are you making these moral judgments about the evils of religion itself? But for you, you seem to be suggesting quite a few modern atheists seem to have sort of gone back to a belief in real moral facts of the matter.
Absolutely. This is one of the points of agreement between me and someone like, say, Sam Harris, is that there is something at stake here. There are not only right and wrong facts about religion, but that there are ways to live that are better and more valuable than others. And that's some answers are more accurate than others. And it's important that we work hard to try and get that right and don't say, well, whatever my culture thinks or whatever my current sensibilities are just is what's right.
And so just to kind of to wrap this up, why then do you disagree with Sam Harris when he says, but we don't need God to explain these moral facts of our universe we live in?
Because Sam Harris has to think, it seems to me, that human beings are capable of getting something right, therefore. And it's very hard to give an account of why, if we've simply... If there is no guiding purpose being expressed through evolution, would be the way I would put it. If there isn't some purpose guiding what's going on, how come what we... the capacities we have turn out to track this objective truth? I mean, it's not obvious that, in fact, what is going to be useful to enable a species to survive and replicate is not always going to track what we would think of as right. So how come we've got this facility for tracking what's right? It seems to me that if you're a moral realist, you're committed to that. and yet you've got a huge problem of explaining why humans are the kind of creatures that can get these things right.
And so for you, the best explanation, if we do believe that we are tracking the moral truth, and we are getting better at doing that, we're coming closer to the real moral facts, then the best explanation is that there is something beyond ourselves in this process, i.e. God.
Yeah, there's a fit between human beings and the moral order. I would argue we're kind of committed to thinking there's that kind of fit, and that points to purpose in the universe.
Well, let's hear what Kyle has to say on this, Kyle. I'm sure you've come across the moral argument in different forms at one time or another. Just be interested to know where you actually stand. Do you stand alongside someone like Sam Harris and say there are real objective moral facts about the universe? Some things are wrong, some things are right. Or are you a relativist, as many other atheists I've known have sort of defended, to say, well, there aren't actually any real moral facts of the matter out there. There's just our kind of, you know, desires and personal preferences that are the product of a sort of unguided evolutionary process.
Sure. That's a great question. And I'll start off by saying I'm not a moral relativist. So I don't believe that morals are relative. Now, at the same time, I'm hesitant to be a moral realist, because I find certain problems there when you believe in moral facts, or there being facts that are moral, as if they're not interpreted as moral or immoral. As I believe Angus mentions the famous quote by Shakespeare, right? There is neither good nor evil, but thinking makes it so. The kind of the anti-realist position. I think that forms a strong critique against things like moral realism. But I don't want to say that there aren't moral facts. I don't know. I'm still in the process of development in my own understanding of moral philosophy. So I am not. I don't have a particular position that is tied down right now. But if I was to express what I think moral action and moral deliberation is based on, I tend to go with the Humean quasi-realist account, which is somewhat expressivist. That is, that we feel these sentiments and we project them onto the external world. This, I believe, is also mentioned by Angus, Simon Blackburn, for instance, Angela Coventry, these two quasi-realists. So it's that we certainly act as if there are moral facts. That goes without question. I act as if the killing of an innocent child is wrong, not just because I have a distaste for it. But I certainly do not know if I can go as far as to commit myself to the moral realism of someone like Sam Harris. It's not to say that I'm against it. It's just I've yet to make my mind up about moral realism. But for now, I consider myself quasi-realist.
Okay, sort of agnostic a bit then on the subject.
Well, kind of that we act as if there are moral facts, but that we cannot prove that there are.
Okay, this is a position you're familiar with, is it?
Yeah.
Angus? Any comment on it? I mean, does it make sense as a position to you?
I think I can completely see why one would be agnostic, because I think there are pulls in different directions. I think there's a pull to a more objective position, which is about just thinking through the implications of how we live. I think that does pull us in an objectivist direction. But if you're not a theist, I think there are obvious problems of the kind I've been sketching out. So that's a pull to a less objectivist position. And my view is that when you actually land on any particular position, it always turns out either to have the problem of being not objective enough to ground how we actually live, the kind of Philippa Foot worry about a non-objectivist position, or it ends up having this problem that, well, okay, so we've got these capacities that track a more objective moral order, where do we get them from?
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to, if possible, we're going to have to go to a break shortly, but get into the subject of let's say, given, say, if you were to to go down the road of, well, let's say there are objective moral values, Kyle, would that then, would there then be a case that Angus is laying out here of the existence of God on that basis, or could there be other explanations for it? I think that might be interesting to do. And I don't know, sometimes we need to kind of try and maybe frame these things in what pictures or analogies that people can grasp onto. So let me leave you with this before we go to the break, if you're listening. What do you think about that example that Angus gave earlier on, the concentration camps of Nazi Germany? Does our moral revulsion at those concentration camps, is that because there is an objectively real fact about the matter that treating people that way is wrong? Whether or not, say Hitler had won the war, and we now lived in a society where, because of that and the propaganda, everyone believed that anti-Semitism was good and gassing Jews was fine, would that mean then that that simply was the morality that we accept? Is morality simply, at the end of the day, what society thinks about a matter? Or would it still be wrong, even though nobody thought it was wrong? Would it actually still be wrong because we can be wrong about moral facts? And if that's the case, does that suggest that there is a moral dimension that isn't part of our natural world, that somehow transcends it? Could this be the evidence for God that Angus suggests? We'll be back in a moment's time. Maybe we'll pick up that question and that picture with my guests Kyle Jones and Angus Ritchie as we ask, good without God, does atheism fail to account for morality?
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley. It's the show every Saturday afternoon here on Premier Christian Radio that brings together Christians and non-Christians for dialogue and debate. Something of a philosophical issue we're discussing today, but I'm going to try and keep our guests to sort of keep this in terms that as many people as possible can engage with. But we're talking about what's sometimes called the moral argument for God. Can we be good without God? And we're not saying, can we lead moral lives without being religious? That's not the question we're asking today, as Angus Ritchie, my guest here in the studio, has said. It's more the question of whether we can account for our moral beliefs without a God, without something more than just the natural universe. Does atheism fail to account for morality? And he's the author of a new book, From Morality to Metaphysics, which makes the case for the theistic implications of our ethical commitments. And he's going to be discussing this at London School of Economics on Thursday, the 6th of December. If you can get along there at 6:30 in the evening, he'll be joined by atheist philosopher Julian Baggini and agnostic philosopher Mark Vernon as they ask whether morality needs a religious foundation. Angus believes it does. He believes, actually, that the fact that we perceive that there is a moral dimension to our world, that some things really are wrong and some things really are right. For instance, the concentration camps were really wrong. Whether or not you believe it, there's a moral fact of the matter there. He says, well, you can only account for that if there is, well, he might not use this term, but one way of looking at it, a moral lawgiver. There is a moral standard to which we are kind of judging these things. And that just doesn't seem to fit with an atheistic worldview where all there is at an ultimate level is matter in motion, molecules and unguided processes of natural selection and that sort of thing. I mean, worth saying at the outset, Angus, you're not against evolution. You made that very clear in the book. You are not sort of saying, evolution must be wrong because we have these moral... You're saying it could be that we have... our moral capacities arise by an evolutionary process, but there still leaves the question of why it happens to be, as you said earlier, that we are tracking this other standard that
Absolutely.
Seems to lie outside it.
I mean, science gives us, I would say, an account of what the world's like and what material processes are going on. And then we can say, well, why is this the case? And in the case of if we do believe there's a moral reality in the way that you've just been discussing, how come the natural processes have thrown up a capacity to track it? And I would say that's a kind of sign that God has been working through the natural processes.
Mm. Because it's just too unlikely a scenario that it would happen to track it on an atheistic worldview. And even the very existence of this objective moral realm is hard to account for on an atheistic worldview.
Probably more, I'd cut atheism more slack on the second of those questions.
Right.
I think personally, I think the sensible thing for an atheist to believe in the end, and this is why so many good atheist philosophers believe it, is that there is, that there are some things in the world just are more valuable than others. Some things just are outrageous and cruel, and those are culture transcendent and sentiment transcending facts. I mean, the Philippa Foot's example of the concentration camps is obviously a highly emotive one,
Well, let's talk about that example, because I think it does help sometimes to use an example to launch from. Kyle, you're our atheist guest today. You don't believe that, presumably, God, if there is this moral realism, this objective moral realm, you presumably don't believe God's needed to account for it. So, I mean, going back to that example, the concentration camps, all three of us obviously think that they were horrendous. We're morally repulsed by the things that Hitler did and Nazi Germany did to Jewish people. But, okay, using this hypothetical, say that Nazi Germany had won that war and now everyone in Europe did believe the things that Hitler believed and thought that that was the morally right thing to do, would it still be actually have been morally wrong?
Well, in my view, yes, in the sense that harm to sentient beings is wrong, or it's generally conceded as wrong to treat people in such a way, to dehumanize them in these ways. But the issue with God there, I find that adding God to the equation is just adding something else that we don't need. For instance, once we start, as Laplace said to Bonaparte, I have no need of this hypothesis. I don't have the need of the hypothesis of God to explain moral behavior, in my opinion. And I think the Holocaust example actually functions against the theistic worldview, because it brings in tons of notions of theodicy, of if God is controlling these things, knows these things will happen, what's going on with the God that is there, or is, like Elie Wiesel said, God hanging from the gallows. And so I wonder if it actually complicates things more. And for me, I don't understand when we say, let's try to find a ground or justification for morality and require such a high level of justification for it. I think it asks for explanation, but I don't think it screams for it. And so I would say something like, it makes more sense in my mind to account for it in terms of evolutionary biology, in terms of social psychology, in terms of sociology, and all these different sciences. Once we look at all those, we can sit back and go, okay, that seems to explain pretty well why people behave more, quote-unquote, morally or immorally in a certain situation. But I don't need to fill the explanatory gap, if there is one left after, with a God.
I think my issue with that is that we're not looking at moral issues from a third personal point of view, and we actually, all of us here, have a conviction that these things were deeply wrong. Now, what does it mean to say that they are wrong? Is that just a statement about our sentiments, about our culture? I mean, I think that's the question at the heart of moral realism. And if it is the case that certain things are wrong, and we think that the Holocaust was wrong, we have a whole set of more detailed moral convictions, how have we come to be beings that get that kind of thing right? I don't see the answer to that yet.
Well, obviously, you don't think that evolution or evolutionary biology can adequately explain it.
Well, no, and neither does Richard Dawkins, interestingly. I mean, he's very clear that some things are... that actually what maximizes the survival and replication of the species and what is morally right come apart. They're not the same thing. So, I mean, on his picture, we've been kind of bequeathed a basic sort of moral framework, perhaps, by evolution. But he talks about the fact we can pull ourselves up by our bootstraps in civilization, and we can now see that certain things...
Absolutely.
Now, but where do those... what does it mean to say we get those things right? I mean...
Are there moral facts here
that we're getting right, that if we simply went for survival of the fittest, we'd be getting wrong or not? And if there are, how come we're the kind of creatures that can get that right?
Well, as far as my understanding, evolution is more than just survival of the fittest. In which social Darwinism is the ethical terminus of believing in evolution. I don't think that that's the case. In fact, evolution, you know, has provided us with a certain consciousness in which we can reflect and deliberate on the past.
Absolutely.
And if that's the case, it provides us with the tools necessary for moral evaluation, and that, to me, doesn't seem to require a god.
But I don't see how that works. I mean, if there's a point then at which we are reflecting on what's right, where we're able to think, well, we know that this is what would maximize species survival and replication, but that's not the right thing. We actually care for people who are vulnerable, and we think people have inalienable rights that even if the species were to benefit, we're not allowed to violate. We think we've got those things right, and yet, by your own admission, we're not. Those aren't the things that will maximise species benefit. So how come we've got this facility to part company with evolution and still keep on getting things right? We're all committed to the view that we managed to do that.
Yes.
Where's that coming from?
Well, I think that's a good question. I would say it's more than just evolutionary imperative at stake or at play here. There's also socialization. There's social psychology. There's the social contract. There's these environmental factors that also play into morality. So it's not simply survival. It's now become survival and well-being. And I think that this I don't understand how, even if evolution fails to completely satisfy or ground or justify morality in terms of giving it a comprehensive explanation, why do we need anything more than it and social psych in order to understand moral behavior? Why do we need anything outside of that? Why do we need God, I guess, is my question.
Well, I mean... And my answer to that, and it's interesting that it's an answer that some atheist philosophers give too. I mean, it's one of the reasons why Sharon Street, you know, isn't a moral realist, because she thinks atheism can't deal with this question, if you're a moral realist. I mean, the problem is that we don't just need an explanation of why we have the particular convictions we have. I mean, you're absolutely right that we can tell our backstory of how we've come to have the set of convictions we have about, say, torture. But we as human beings don't just believe we happen to have those convictions. We believe those convictions are right. We believe there's a moral order where our convictions actually track that truth. Now, it seems to me that this can only go one of two ways. Either we say, well, there's not really a truth being tracked, in which case we're now saying that there isn't something fundamentally wrong in these things beyond our convictions. Or we see there is a moral truth, in which case there's this big question as to, well, yeah, you can give me the backstory about why we all believe this, but how come these beliefs track reality?
Yeah, I once had a conversation with Richard Dawkins in which I asked him something along these lines. I said, is our moral sense as sort of unguided, in a sense, as the evolutionary process itself, you know, is me saying rape is wrong as a random, in a sense, as the fact I've developed five fingers instead of six? And he, interestingly, at that point in his understanding, said, yes, it is. Now, he may have changed his mind since Sam Harris's book, but
yeah,
at least at that point, he was saying there is no objective morality. What we think now could have been different had evolution taken a different course. And in a sense, I can see that from the point of view of, you know, other societies in the past and now developed quite different moral beliefs to the Western world. So, you know, Sam Harris is very concerned about some of those societies where he thinks women are being mistreated, or that, you know, leave little girls to die on mountains because they believe that having boys is better than having girls, and they're morally justified in doing that. Now, I suppose the question is, what gives us the right to think that we have the right moral point of view on those issues, to say to someone in another society, in another place, you're doing wrong, you shouldn't be doing that, unless there is actually an objective standard to which we're appealing and saying, you're wrong about that, because we happen to know that there is actually a truth of the matter on this.
And I think one of the things Sam Harris underplays is that will sometimes be about a critique of our society too. I mean, this is not some kind of, you know, moral realism isn't some kind of claim of imperialism for whatever society we're in. We're saying that there is a moral reality, and that means there might be some things we've got quite fundamentally wrong. And if you look back through history, that the moral consensus at any given moment, we have to say, has got some stuff wrong.
Yeah.
And so we're saying we have we're saying that when we reflect on these things, we're trying to get something right. The thing we're trying to get right isn't the same thing as what will enable us to survive and replicate, although there'll be some relation between the two.
I mean, another example I threw into a Facebook discussion recently was slavery. You know, 300 years ago, most people in the UK may have believed that was fine. Slavery was acceptable, morally justifiable. Now, the vast majority of society says, no, it's reprehensible.
Yeah.
Now, that must mean they were wrong at that time. They were morally Absolutely. Mistaken. They were just simply, they'd made a mistake in their moral understanding, which we know about now. But can the atheist say that, I suppose, is the question, Kyle? Or are they obliged to say, we just feel differently about it now? And what they felt then, that was the way they felt then.
Yeah, I don't go that route, and I don't think many atheists would either. I mean, I think slavery and subjugation of women and the mistreatment of children are all, as far as I can tell, objectively wrong and bad. But can I prove that? Do I have the surety? Do I have the certitude that there are these moral facts? I cannot say that I do, but I certainly behave and act as if they are more robust than fictions, and that they are useful, not only evolutionarily, but in terms of our social interactions. So, go ahead. I just wanted to distinguish
two things here, which are, I can completely see that you're not, I'm not certain that the particular moral beliefs I have now are right. I mean, there are very likely to be some quite serious respects in which people will look back at some later point in history and think, you know, Angus was just wrong about that. You know, and there are interesting debates about what they are. But that's quite different from the question as to what kind of truth this is. Are our moral beliefs, when they're right, more than expression of our sentiments and what our culture happens to think, or not? That's the kind of, I think, the key question for atheists.
And if that were the case, I know you're...
Do we need to know either way? I mean, the level, it's like, it seems as if, like I'm saying, the screaming for a justification as opposed to the asking for.
Well, it has some quite fundamental.
I don't. Do we really need to choose between those two options?
I think we do for two reasons, if I might say so. I mean, one is that if you go for a kind of expressivist view, Ronald Dworkin, again, not a Christian, makes this point very well. You know, when I say I have a difference of taste from someone, you know, I dislike, I don't know, ice cream, I can have very strong and intense tastes and very weak tastes. But what I'm doing when I say something's wrong is not, it's not dialing up the taste dial to maximum. It's actually making a claim which is more categorical. So I think there's a the nature of what we're doing when we make judgments, and that's obviously most dramatized by cases like the Holocaust. But I think there's also a very practical implication. If you think there's something we're trying to get right, then that means we've got to think very hard about the fact that the most consistent picture of our current sentiments might be wrong. There might be some real need to reform in ways that we're culturally blind to at the moment. Whereas if you think morality is just a construct out of sentiments and cultural norms, there's not going to be that impulse to kind of think, have we got something really, really wrong? I think that's a real problem for quasi-realism in particular as well, and I argue that in the book.
And I suppose for me it's also that question of what gives someone who does think they have the moral, that they've discovered the moral truth, the right to inform someone else or even tell someone else they must stop doing something. The people who leave children to die in India or whatever it might be. It seems that on a view of it, it essentially boiling down to tastes and societal pressures, it's very difficult for us to justify why we should enforce our tastes on someone who has a different set of tastes and values. I mean, those are so. Yeah, your response, Carl. Let's give you a chance to.
I get the point of the kind of practical import of moral realism as an impetus for trying to discover or search after moral truth. That to me is fine and dandy. What I don't get about Angus's position here is the moral realism does not bother me as much as the idea that God grounds this morality. That to me is the more problematic of the claims. The moral realist claim, let's just assume that's the case.
Okay.
Fine. Why does that even as a moral realist, why would you need a God?
Well, if you're a moral realist who doesn't believe in God, my argument is you've got a bit of a problem who doesn't believe in purpose in the universe? I mean, Thomas Nagel has just got a book out arguing for a purpose in the universe that isn't God, and I think there is a whole different question there. But if you don't think that there is that kind of purpose in the universe, then how do you explain, you're a moral realist, you think that when we deliberate, there's something we're trying to get right, and that deliberating is a useful process in trying to get it right, that our capacities can track the truth. That's not been given to us just by evolution. We've already established that evolution isn't going to give us the capacity to get these things right. How come we've got a capacity to get these things right? How come we've got any ability to track this objective moral order at all?
Well, why would you need, as you have just brought up with Nagel, why would you need God if you could just replace that with purpose?
I mean, I think that's a separate issue. If you, it's a very, very different picture of the world that Nagel has, the fact that something's, he pretty much thinks that the fact that something looks designed, and evolution doesn't explain it, doesn't mean you need a designer. The kind of explanation is that there's a natural teleology in the world. I think that's a very unusual view that purpose and shape doesn't need an explanation. And if you think as you know, most of us do when we think about science, that when there's a pattern that needs some kind of explanation, then that kind of surely points.
I suppose it's to some extent simply asking which is more consistent with the way we see if moral realism is true. Is a theistic worldview more consistent with it, or an atheistic worldview more consistent with it? And it's simply the challenge is theism, on the face of it, just appears to be more consistent with that worldview. It explains a lot more than atheism does. Atheism. And so that's the reason why God might be needed in that sense.
Yes.
It's not that we're trying to crowbar God into a gap, an explanatory gap. It's that it does it makes more sense if God, if we live in a theistic world rather than an atheistic one.
If you're in
I don't understand.
Sorry, go ahead.
I just don't understand. I would have to hear first how it makes more sense, other than just that the fact that our capacities can moral capacities can track onto reality. I would have to hear something more than that to make sense of God. And then there's also this question here of what God are you referring to? What's this God like? How do you know anything about this God? How can you even speak about a God that is quote-unquote infinite or omniscient or omnipotent if you're using human terms? There's the Euthyphro dilemma. There's so many different issues that can be brought up once we start saying God.
Well, yes, absolutely. And I think, I mean, the only way we can get anywhere in these discussions, I mean, is if we kind of, you know, if they happen one at a time. So I think the question today is that we are moral realists, we're committed to thinking there is this reality, and we manage to track it in some sense reliably in a way that natural selection, without any other notion of purpose in the world, wouldn't explain. Now, I mean, it's not good to have features of the world just lying around unexplained. So the claim of the book is in that sense quite modest. It's just saying, look, here's a fundamental thing that theistic worldviews can explain and atheistic ones can't. And there might be many other reasons to be a theist or an atheist, but on this issue, theism can explain something that atheism can't.
And you're not in that argument attempting to make an argument for all of God's characteristics. It's simply saying, at least on this argument,
I'm still not understanding how it explains it better.
Well, because it strikes me you're accepting that there is. I mean, we've accepted moral realism at this point. We've accepted that's the right construal. So there are features of reality. There's a moral order that human beings are capable of latching onto. We can track the truth on this issue, natural selection doesn't explain that property. So we're able to do these things. How come?
But because natural selection doesn't mean that theism does.
It's not obvious what. I mean, one of the great powers of natural selection is that it can often manage to explain things that look like purpose without there being any. I mean, that's one of its incredible bits of explanatory power. It's not a candidate in this situation. That's not a kind of God of the gaps point. It's just not the kind of thing we've established, that it's not the kind of thing evolution's going to manage to get right. We need explanations when there's apparent purpose. Would be my kind of.
I mean, you seem to be saying, Kyle, it's just a bad explanation, that God isn't a good explanation for moral realism.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it isn't, but I don't understand. When you use the term purpose, are you talking about purpose with an uppercase P or a lowercase P? Because certainly there are many different purposes at play in the world. And now there also, I mean, are we talking about some kind of meta narrative, some kind of grand plan, something like this, some capital P purpose? Is that what you're saying grounds morality, or are you saying a bunch of lowercase P's ground morality?
I'm saying that there would have to be something about the way the universe is shaped that explains this harmony between our capacities for moral reasoning and the moral order. Now, I would then say more needs to be filled in other areas of philosophy, religion, and indeed, for as a Christian, I would say we need to attend to claims that there's been a revelation. But all I'm seeking to say in this argument is that there is something here which secular worldviews where there's no intrinsic purpose behind the universe, can't explain. Now, there may be other reasons to hold a secular worldview, but it's just on this issue there's quite a major defect.
I suppose the point is you've spotted a problem that atheism seems incapable of accounting for.
Yeah.
You've suggested a good explanation would be the existence of a loving God, who purposes within the evolutionary framework this teleology, to use a technical word, this purpose that our moral capacities will match up with the moral order that really exists out there. And I suppose you're inviting anyone who doesn't believe that to give an alternative explanation.
Absolutely.
But you haven't heard a good one as yet.
No, and I think there are, yes, I think there are some quite fundamental. I mean, it's not a surprise that very few atheists offer anything else, because that's going to be a big ask.
We're going to have to take a break, and we'll allow Kyle to come back on that in a moment's time. You're listening to Unbelievable, asking, can we be good without God? Does atheism fail to account for moral realism? Do come back as we continue and finish off today's discussion here on the show that aims to get you thinking. Unbelievable, with me, Justin Brierley.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
We got to the point, gentlemen, of kind of having this impasse, let's say, of you believing that God, a theistic worldview, is the best explanation for our the sense that most people have that there are real moral facts out there, Angus, that the Holocaust was really wrong, whether or not you agree with me, or whether or not another society agrees, it really, we can know what's right and wrong in some cases. And as we said earlier, it seems that a lot of the new atheists, to use their label, kind of agree with that. They're no longer saying what some of those philosophers of the mid-20th century were saying, where they were pulling down the idea of an objective moral value. Sam Harris, in particular, obviously trying to ground these moral values in science. Some would say not doing a brilliant job of doing that. You certainly have a number of things to say in your book about his attempt at doing that. But obviously, there is at least a sense that people are realising, no, there really is a moral fact of the matter.
Yeah.
And at least at some level, people like Sam Harris are trying to give an explanation from an atheistic worldview.
Yes, I mean, I think, as I say in the Theos report, I really don't think, funnily enough, I really don't think Sam Harris does justice to what atheist philosophers can say. I think what he says is, you know, just skates over some of the big issues. But there are, you know, good, thoughtful atheist philosophers who are coming round to some kind of moral realism. And I think this leaves them with this problem.
Yeah, and I suppose the question for you is, well, if this is the case, where next for atheism?
Well, I mean, I think Kyle was right in the last section to say, well, hold on, there's a whole load of other questions we could get into here. The fact that, if I'm right, the fact that atheism can't explain this wouldn't in and of itself necessarily make you a theist, because you might think there's loads of other things. You might think theism isn't fully coherent. You might think the problem of evil is a huge problem. So there need to be, you know, there's going to be a range of debates. But on this issue, I think there is something that theism can explain. We need explanations for these kind of things. We vast cosmic coincidences don't sit easily with being rational. And so on this issue, theism can explain a fundamental feature of reality that atheism has real problems with. That would be where I would see the debate. And therefore, I think you could be an atheist who just lives with that discomfort. But then why would you? And that would lead us into other areas of apologetics and other podcasts, I guess.
Well, indeed, yes. Kyle, you're someone who you've said throughout that you don't see why God should be used as an explanation for this, even if you acknowledge atheism, strict atheism, has a problem here to explain this moral realism realm. I mean, is it down to you guys to sort of come up with some good explanations at this point, or are you okay with just letting it stand as a bit of a mystery and moving on to other things?
Yeah, the you know, where the onus is a good question, but I'm content with I'm certainly content with the notion that sciences do the best they can to explain morality. They don't need to explain it completely in order to have a reasonable understanding of how it functions and how it arises within human processes. A natural explanation for natural phenomena makes sense to me, and that I don't feel there is any need to go any further than that. I mean, we can obviously sit and wait for more developments in, say, neuroscience and other areas that may shed more light on this, but I don't feel like believing that it was a God who, you know, I don't know, created the world and then guides it purposefully through the world. I don't think that helps. That to me is a what Douglas Adam called like a puddle explanation, where the puddle becomes conscious and goes, wow, look, this crack in this road really fits me very well. This crack, it fits me. It was obviously, this crack was made for the puddle. But then the puddle eventually dries up, and it turns out that, you know, the crack in the ground wasn't made for the puddle. So I don't find that it helps us in any way.
But I just don't see how you can say that, because if we don't think that morality is objective, then absolutely fine. That's, you know, we've got a backstory scientifically as to why we happen in this culture at this time to believe what we do. But I thought we'd established that we all thought that it was plausible that moral realism was true, in which case, surely there is a further question, which is how come these, our cognitive capacities, can track an objective reality? So this isn't a puddle type question. We're committed to thinking that there's something about the shape of our cognitive capacities that matches something quite distinct from them. That's something I thought you were committed to, Carl, as well as me. And that's something which you just haven't offered any explanation for. I mean,
for the sake of the discussion, I was saying I would assume moral realism and say that just because there's moral realism doesn't imply theism, and it certainly doesn't imply that that the world was kind of set up or structured in such a way as to map on structured implying a structurer. I don't think that follows.
But I don't kind of see how you don't see that, in that if we are assuming moral realism, we've said that there is there's a human capacity for getting something right. There's a harmony between these capacities that have emerged and a reality beyond them. And there's being, and we've established that natural selection, this isn't just a little kind of gap. That's why I'm, you know, one of the reasons I'm quite, you know, sympathetic to evolutionary theory is I'm not at all into, you know, here's a gap you can't, you know, deal with the fossil records at the moment. This is a big problem. This isn't that kind of thing at all. This is the kind of thing natural selection cannot explain, because it's, this is about a capacity to track truth quite distinct
And from that perspective, advances in neuroscience,
it's not going to help at all.
All of that isn't just doesn't touch this issue.
It doesn't.
It's impotent to speak to the question of why we seem to have this ability to track moral, another realm, which is kind of beyond the material realm.
I find that oftentimes why questions lead to unrealistically high bars needed for justification that I don't think are really needed.
So you think it's okay to say we've got a capacity to get to track an objective reality quite distinct from our characteristics or culture, and there's no need to explain why we've got that capacity? I mean,
I didn't say there's no need to explain it so
there is something. I mean, I kind of do believe that the theistic,
it doesn't need to be completely explained.
But it would count against an account. I mean, if we're weighing up the merits of different accounts of the universe, then it would count against an account that it can't explain this, and in favour of an account that it can, would it?
I mean, you can have an explanation that's comprehensive and awful, and you can have an explanation that's minute and correct.
But you've got no explanation of.
I think biological evolution and social psych does a pretty good job.
But we've already established that they don't do anything to tell us why we would be accurate in our beliefs. They can tell us why we happen to have the set of beliefs we currently have, but we haven't had any explanation of why they would provide us with beliefs that track an objective moral reality. So I think, as I say, I mean, I kind of think atheists and theists need to have more conversations where we admit that there are strengths and weaknesses of different positions. I just think this is one issue where, you know, atheism has a big weakness. It may have strengths elsewhere, which can be discussed in other apologetic debates. But here, it hasn't really got off the starting block in explaining this.
We're going to have to start to draw it to a close, gents, and I appreciate we could go on all afternoon, couldn't we, about this. But we are going to have to draw it to a close. Kyle, thank you very much for your input today. And if people want to find out more about you, where should they go?
Well, they can just look me up on Google, or I'm also the editor of Claremont Journal of Religion, which is claremontjournal.com. So I'm also there as well. And thank you very much for having me. I was really honored.
Well, it was great of you to get up very early in the morning.
Absolutely.
To talk to us.
Yeah, thank you, Angus, for the discussion, and Justin for having me.
Great to have you on, Kyle. Do check out Kyle. I'll post a link to the journal Kyle mentions there, where you can find out more about what he does with the podcast of today's program. Thanks also to Angus for joining us. Angus,
thank you both.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the show. Please do get in touch with your thoughts. You can email me unbelievable@premier.org.uk. I've often found in my experience that the moral argument really gets people talking, and perhaps the one I get most energized about too. So please do jump in. Let us know what you thought. You can find links to our newsletter, the YouTube channel, Ways to Give, the archive of past shows, many more resources for exploring faith and also understanding, defending and sharing your faith with confidence. PremierUnbelievable.com. See you next time.